Welcome to the PrevMed Health Podcast with Dr. Brewer, your go-to source for heart attack and stroke prevention. And I am your host, Ford Brewer. Each week, we dive deep into the latest trends, expert insights, and practical tips to help you decrease your risk of heart attack and stroke. We discuss plaque reversal, insulin resistance, prediabetes, diabetes, cholesterol, supplements, medications, and so much more. So sit back, relax, and have this journey to a long and healthy life together.
Colon cancer. It's now one of the most common and deadliest cancers out there. It's not just another adult thing. It's not just for people over 50 anymore. That started changing a few years ago. It's showing up in people in their 30s and 40s, often with symptoms that they didn't connect the dots on. They just ignored. That's why in this video, we'll break down the top five warning signs that you need to know. And that if you're a boomer like me, maybe your kids need to know before it's too late. And as a bonus, I had my own colonoscopy. The doctor went up inside my backside and we have the results. We'll share that experience. I'm sure Jesus is looking forward to that. So, you begin to know what to expect and how to get this done on your own. It may not be pleasant. It may not be fun. And as Jesus said, I took one for the team on this one. No, this is not just for the channel. It was for my own health. And as you'll see, I've got some things I need to do in there. We'll cover that a little bit later. Jesus?
Fantastic. So you took it on the rear for your health. For the channel as well.
And for the channel.
Fantastic.
Now, as we'll see, I got some health issues I need to look at too.
Yeah, we're going to be sharing some of those. Let's go at it. So colon cancer. Colon cancer is one of the most common types of cancers out there right now, second deadliest. And as Dr. Brewer said, it's becoming more and more common even in young people. We personally have the experience with a friend of ours who recently passed because of it. And the problem is the young man, my age actually, 34. He would be 34 by now, I think. And you just don't think about it. You just don't realize how prevalent that is. And it's so complicated to go through that, especially at a very young age. And as you get older, your chances of getting it get higher and higher. So first sign, want to discuss a little bit about this one, bleeding or blood in the stool. So if you have bleeding, what's the problem with this one? Any thoughts on this one, Dr. Brewer?
Yeah, most people, again, especially guys, we tend to deny everything. And there's several problems here. One of them is most people don't ever look. Of the people that do look, then, you know, let's say you see something, you know, there's a good point to be made that, well, if it's bright red blood, sort of like we're seeing in this image, maybe it's more likely to be a hemorrhoid, a bleeding hemorrhoid. So Unfortunately, though, something like a bleeding hemorrhoid becomes another mechanism for denial. I don't have a colon cancer. That can't be me. That's somebody else. And this has just got to be a hemorrhoid. Well, you know, again, don't guess. Test.
And the other part is if it is indeed a hemorrhoid, you can have both. Like hemorrhoids itself can be, we're going to see on the next symptoms, hemorrhoids in themselves can be also part of the issue. And they both mask and can be associated with colon cancer, not because you have an hemorrhoid itself, but the whole process and the whole problem. And you can have both types of bleeding where you have this fresh red blood, but you can also have more like a brown, darkish blood, which can tell you that the bleeding is coming from somewhere even deeper. So If you have bleeding on your stool, be careful. That's going to be a major sign. But there's a major problem. There is also hidden blood in the stool. And that's why Dr. Brewer is talking about testing, because you might not see it and you can still be having some bleeding on there. You just don't know it. So that's one of the major and first signs that often gets missed.
You know, in preparation for this video, I didn't cover it. You may have, we may get to it, but I did a series on colon cancer and colon cancer screening in the, a few years ago. Things have changed somewhat, but some of the key, most important information, I can't remember the exact number, but to me, I think it was estimates of over half of colon cancer deaths could have been prevented by proper screening. The another personal point, the young man that you mentioned is not the only coworker that I've had that has had a young diagnosis of colon cancer. I had another coworker. She wasn't as young as the gentleman you just mentioned, but she was like in her late 40s, early 50s when this happened. You just got to, I mean, there's people falling out there and they don't need to be. Screening works.
Definitely. And we're going to talk more about screening because there are positives and negatives, of course.
Yeah, well, that's
we're beyond just having something on your anus. There's more than that. That's the easy part.
Yeah.
Okay, so change in bowel habits, like having a lot of diarrhea, frequent diarrhea, or constipation, or a lot of gas, and that becomes a major problem. How many people do you know, Dr. Brewer, that have been diagnosed with IBS, irritable bowel syndrome?
Gosh, you know, and it gets it gets far more common, far more prevalent as you age. The number of boomers, you know, just do a quick scroll through the internet, through YouTube, and how many things do you see with where people are talking about gut problems? And like you said, how many are carrying IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, as a diagnosis? And how many of those have actually had proper screening for colon cancer?
Yeah, for sure. And I wanted also to add one of the components on why this kind of stuff happened. One thing on the bleeding we didn't mention, remember that colon cancer, as all cancers, there's inflammation involved. So you can have mild bleeding when the tumor, the mass, is not big enough, probably just yet, and is still damaging the inner lining of the intestines, causing some bleeding. Or when the tumor gets bigger, the bleeding is going to become more and more evident. So it hurts the blood vessels on the lining of the bowel or the intestines on the colon. And when the bowel habit changes, it happens the same way. There's an inflammatory response that's causing diarrhea, constipation. And as the tumor gets bigger, you can even have problems with the shape of your stool, where you have small pieces of the stool. Like they come like, I don't know if you say it that way in the U.S. as well, like goat poop. Does that make sense?
Goat poop?
Goat poop? Hmm. Or sheep poop? Have you ever seen how the sheep's poop? They do like small balls.
Yeah,
they don't do that just like that. Or you have like a very thin stool, and it's just because of the shape on the insides of the bowel.
Rabbits poop that way too, tiny little balls.
Never had a rabbit though. But yeah,
I never had a rabbit either. But I used to hunt them with my grandpa.
Huh? Can you tell us a little bit more about that, just as a segue? How was that?
Well, my grandpa was actually, there were four sort of people that created the original Foxhound Hall of Fame. There were two hunters and two dogs, and he was one of the two hunters. So he was a big, big hunter. But he graduated, or as he got older and started retiring, he went more into rabbit hunting. It was a great way, you know, us like 6-year-old kids couldn't really keep up with them on foxhounds, fox hunting, but we could keep up with them at rabbit hunting. And one of my favorite memories as a 6-year-old was, and we'd go out and chase rabbits. We weren't really hunting them to We didn't ever bring him home to eat them, at least as he got older. I remember he and I were walking along together in the woods, listening to the dogs and following them. And he grabbed my shoulder, or he put his hand on my shoulder gently, and he took his cane and he pointed down at the forest floor. I looked over, and it looked like, to me, a six-year-old, it looked like a little, I thought it was a, you know, what do you call those things that have all the stickers coming out?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Anyhow, rather than that, it was a little baby bunny. And he sort of just the down with his at the end of his cane. The bunny took off, and it was so exciting for me as a six-year-old. Thank you for listening to all those stories.
Yeah, and thank you, the audience. I know we're talking about colon cancer. I didn't want to miss that opportunity to grab on Dr. Brewer's past, even though it's been so so far away. Did you go into the poops of the rabbits and go like this and smell them to see where the rabbits were? No, we didn't
do the Cheech and Chong thing. If you remember that cultural thing.
Oh yeah.
Step in it, huh?
Yeah. Well, bottom line, bowel issues usually misdiagnosed as IBS, as irritable bowel syndrome. So if you have that problem, you need to check it out and make sure that this is not a major issue. Often when you feel like you're full, you go to the bathroom and it just feels like you still have some on you and you haven't been able to release completely. That's another issue that could be making that. This is a major one for most types of cancer. So if you're losing weight in an unhealthy manner, you're not trying to lose weight, you are just losing both fat but also losing a lot of muscle, that's a major sign for most types of cancer. And as you know, cancer consumes a lot of energy, triggers inflammation, and it will start burning your cell from the inside. Do you have any comments on this one?
I don't, but I will go back. The word is porcupine. JH helped me with it. That's what I thought that was. But to your point about unexplained weight loss, you know, some people sometimes start thinking that that's a good thing. But then when they start finding, they go to the bathroom and they find a lot of blood, that's one of the more common ways of diagnosing this. And sometimes it's not just a tiny amount of blood. The cancer itself, you know, bits and pieces of it can fall off. It's what we call friable. Sometimes it's not very tough tissue. When a piece of it might fall off, you might get a lot of bleeding out of that. So at that point, it becomes hard to deny.
Unfortunately, this is one of the latest signs. I made myself bigger because I was too far away. But yeah, it's one of the latest signs. That's kind of the downside. We don't want you to wait until this circumstance happen. If this has happened, you're too far down. There are four stages of colon cancer, from what I know. There's the superficial one that's only on the lining of the bowel. Then it gets bigger and starts invading some of the other structures around the bowel. That's when the tumor gets actually bigger. The third one is when the tumor gets to go into your lymph nodes and it starts invading the lymphatic system, which is the waistline for blood supplies, also cholesterol, and that goes back to the vessels. And the problem is when colon cancer cells go into the lymphatic system and then go to the bloodstream, then you start getting to the fourth phase where the cancer goes especially to your liver and to your lungs. And at that point, it's just too late. So if you're getting this, this is, fortunately, this is probably too late. But you have to know. Persistent abdominal discomfort. This one is a little bit different from just the diarrhea and the constipation and the stool shapes. This has to do more with gas, bloating, cramps, and pain, which is often vain. It's often non-specific. You go to the doctor and they're like, yeah, this is IBS. Just take some antacids or something for the pain, some hot pads, and you'll be fine. And it's actually your body trying to tell you, hey, there's something wrong over here. Any thoughts on this one?
Not a whole lot. No, I mean, again, a tumor is something that is not moving around until it starts to metastasize. If it hits near, one of the more common things that can happen with colon cancers is that it can it can hit near some of the ligaments that hold the colon together and start causing pulls on that, and you get these squirrely pains, and you know, you do some workup. If you don't do a workup for if that workup doesn't include cancer, then you can miss it entirely.
Of course. And thank you for pointing that out. I wasn't aware of the pulling on the ligaments and stuff like that. That's interesting. Yeah, so be careful about this one as well. And the last one, the 5-1, is fatigue or anemia, which makes sense. If you are bleeding constantly, even a slow, small levels of bleeding or small amounts of blood, to keep losing that constantly, that's going to lead you to iron deficiency, anemia, low hemoglobin. You know what happens when you have anemia and low hemoglobin. You get pale, you get fatigue, you can get some dizziness. And what do most doctors do, Dr. Brewer, when they see anemia and low, even without low iron? What do they prescribe?
Iron.
And we, unfortunately, doctors don't think about this as an option. Maybe up until when you're 60 or 70, they start thinking about, yeah, this might be cancer, let's figure it out. But most doctors will probably just get you supplementation and no necessarily get you screening. So that's important to consider and ask for the screening if you haven't had that one.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where so many things happen in medicine. It's sort of like the statin, the high LDL, and throw a statin at it and run out the room to the next patient. We quite often, I mean, YouTube, it used to be sort of a scuzzy, not really that good of a place, but you're getting some really high quality stuff on YouTube now. And you're having patients come in and say, hey, is that really the right thing for my health? They know a lot more when they come in to see the doctor. And what Jesus is talking about is another good way, a good kind of challenge for your doc. Hey, if I've got anemia, should you really just be giving me iron, or should we be looking a little bit deeper?
Mm-hmm. And a lot of cases of anemia are caused by that iron deficiency, but it's not the only cause. And iron deficiency can be easily fixed, but a lot of cases of iron deficiency have a secondary cause. Colon cancer is one of them. So I want to talk about the diagnostic tools. Dr. Brewer did a colonoscopy. Want to talk a little bit more about this one, Dr. Brewer?
Sure. So colonoscopy, especially in the U.S., and especially when you talk to GI docs, they're all going to say, look, that's the only way to do it. In that series, I think I did, it was a few years ago, and I think I did it was 5 or 6 videos, one on each of these. Fecal immunochemical test, FIT, FOBT, it's GWIAC. You know, Jesus and I and other doctors that have spent time as interns in a hospital, you know, we've done a lot of GWIACs where we do a rectal exam and then look for a chemical reaction called GWIAC, which shows, I mean, you can't really see, you're checking, you know, the stool is brown and pasty, so you don't see any blood in it, but you still spread that on the GWIAC to look for a reaction. If it turns, then you know, there's probably some blood in here. And so that's why it's called occult blood. You're not seeing it. Now, there's some other tests. One of the ones that's just marketed very, very heavily is the stool DNA test, Cologuard. Now, it does have some significant advantages, at least technologically and theoretically, too, over just looking for blood, because blood is making an assumption that, you know, maybe it is a cancer. And at that point, you need to go looking deeper. Mm-hmm. If you're actually looking for the DNA that's involved with the cancer itself, at least theoretically, that gets you a lot closer. It's not so much quicker. And one of the downsides is usually you have to have, it's not a small amount of stool. It is a large sample that you have to give. Flexible sigmoidoscopy, you don't see quite as much. You used to see a lot of that, especially in the United States, about 20 and 30 years ago. It's mostly been replaced by colonoscopy. Then you got a couple of new things on the block. CT colonography, the virtual colonoscopy. You know, people don't like the bowel prep. And Jesus, I don't I did a few videos. They weren't gross or ugly. Well, my face may have been ugly, but I did a few videos of the more challenging part of the bowel prep. It's basically where you're going on clear liquids for a couple of days to clean out that bowel. So the colonoscopist, the GI doc, can see inside without having the view obstructed by feces. That's a challenge. It's not fun. One thing that we don't have on here is for the future. It's not ready for prime time yet. And you could argue that some of these aren't either, but that's the liquid biopsy. And the liquid biopsy is similar to the stool DNA test, except it's not looking for the DNA for the cancer in the stool. It's a blood test. And folks that are deep into the future of cancer screening have been looking for this for a long time. Theoretically, you could just get a few blood samples and look for the DNA that we know is characteristic for high probability cancers. Look for that DNA. If you find it, then you know where to start. You know to start looking. So again, there's a lot of stuff that still needs to be ironed out in terms of colon cancer screening, as well as screening for other types.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not a fun test. Even drinking the liquid that you have to do for the prep tastes horrible. It's the worst thing. I haven't done my colonoscopy myself, but I have had family members, and I just tasted that thing, and I was like, yeah, I don't blame you for not wanting to do this. But I mean, there's a point where, especially if you have symptoms, you're going to have to go through it. There's a couple of things. Yeah. J&K said something very interesting that I wanted to mention, and it's right. Colonoscopies do anything to change colon cancer deaths? Like they reduce the risk, but the mortality probably hasn't changed that much, according to a couple of studies. What they have seen is, because of these challenges on colonoscopies, seems like a lot of people are not actually doing the colonoscopies. And just to make a difference, colonoscopy versus sigmoidoscopy. Sigmoidoscopy goes to a specific part of your colon, which is right after the rectum. And I have an image right here. These are your images, but
we're looking up inside my backside here.
Yeah, and we're going to go deeper on that. I just wanted to show the sigmoid. This is the sigmoid over here. So the sigmoidoscopy just goes up until this point, whereas the colonoscopy goes through the whole thing. So you will think, okay, colonoscopy should be able to catch more. Yes, but it's more of a hassle compared to a quick sigmoidoscopy, which is still uncomfortable because you can get a sigmoidoscopy without sedation, and you usually get sedated for the colonoscopy. So it's tricky. The other tests are good proxies, but if some of those are positive, you still want to go and see if there is something in there and where is it, and define what the treatment is going to be. So not an easy thing to consider, but I think we have been neglecting one major component that I didn't put on the slides. Why are we seeing this much cases of colon cancer as of right now, Dr. Brewer?
I wish I could tell you. I wish we knew. You know, I've shared with you a couple of times. Yeah, I don't know if you just didn't like it or if you were ignoring me as usual.
Probably both.
Yeah, probably. But, you know, there is some evidence, very interesting evidence. We know something has changed, because we didn't used to see colon cancer in 40-something, even 50-something, 40-something, even, clearly even 30-something-year-old people, except for people that had some specific genetic, rare genetic issues. But mm-hmm. Now we're seeing it. Now, has the gene pool changed that quickly? Could not have. That's not the issue. It's not genetic predispositions something has to have changed in the environment. Well, most of us, when we're talking about the environment for the gut, we're talking about what it's usually exposed for. So exposed to, and you know where that's going. You know, those of us like in the low carb community, we also know that colon cancer has some linkage to diabetes. That's one of the big red flags that many of us are looking for. There's research going on right now. It'll be interesting to see how that pans out. There's already been some fascinating research that I shared with you and you ignored about fructose, indicating that fructose is a biochemical enabler for colon cancers. Now, it's way too early to blame that. It's not conclusive yet. But that just fits so well, and it's so fascinating. You get the, what, back in the 70s, the development of high fructose corn syrup. You get the discovery that, oh my gosh, that fires the reward centers in the brain. So every big food company is filling every food they can with fructose. And now we're getting a big increase in younger colon cancers. So, I mean, you put those facts together. Tell me what you think.
I think you're right on the spot. Metabolic disease, prediabetes, diabetes has two mechanisms to screw you up. First, it causes inflammation, significant inflammation everywhere, including vessels. And you know that we said inflammation on the vessels and cancer, they're tightly together. They're bound together. And the other thing that a lot of people don't realize is that type 2 diabetes also suppresses the immune system. So you don't have the right defenses to tackle on any cancer cell that starts to develop. So you have that combo. You are feeding the cancer and you cannot defend from it. And also a lot of cancer cells feed from sugar, just to put it in a very simplistic way.
Just add fuel to that fire, literally speaking. They feed on sugar.
And I know there's something where we agree on with the carnivore community is that even though everybody will tell you meat causes cancer, there's plenty of evidence. We went through that evidence, and to us, it's very weak evidence. Even the recommendations from the International Commission for Cancers, they put it as weak recommendation, and it's a little bit stronger for processed meat than it is for lean meats or even unprocessed meats, unprocessed beef. I don't think that's such a big issue. We have a lot of people on carnivore that have improved their bowel symptoms and they're doing better. But also I remain cautious about processed meat compared to unprocessed meat. But
yeah,
we agree more on the metabolic disease rather than in meat products, right?
Oh, yeah. No question. I'm much more concerned about metabolic disease. You know, nitrosamines have always been, they've been labeled as a carcinogen. And nitrosamines are what you see in processed meats. The most common ones, like you mentioned, is bacon. And I still eat bacon. I'm not quite so worried about that. I'm not nearly so worried about nitrosamines as I am the risks and devastation, the death and disability from metabolic disease.
Yeah. It's been a while since I ate bacon because the ones that I have on the store, they're just processed. And that's the part I don't like that much. But I need to go to my local meat person and see what I can find. So let's talk about your colonoscopy results. So you went in there. How did it go? Tell us your experience first, and then we will describe the images that are right there on the screen.
Well, this experience was a lot better than my first one. My first colonoscopy, I'm 67. I would guess this is my third now. My first one, I didn't have anything except a couple of little ticks, diverticuli. My second one was a few years ago, and they saw the beginning of what this guy's seeing now. But the experience itself, a fellow named Nathan, who was a friend of mine in my Sunday school class, was a gastroenterologist and a good one. And he and I talked when I was scheduling the colonoscopy, and he said, well, you know, I know you're curious. I know you want to see everything. How about if I just lightly sedate you and then you can actually be awake and see what's going on? And I said, well, that sounds neat. I said, I can do that? He said, oh, yeah, we'll do that. So they did that. I remember it knocked me out, though. I went right to sleep. But then I woke up in the middle of the procedure, and I was having this sort of a dream state. And it was one of the early scenes in the movie Alien. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That movie where the guy is strapped out on the operating table, and all of a sudden his stomach just starts jumping around. And then the alien, the first scene that you see the alien, he comes out, he's got his teeth, he pops right out of the belly. And yeah, that's sort of the way I felt, that there was an alien right there in my belly. And I said, hey, I don't want to see anything. Knock me out. This hurts.
Yeah. So
that was not a good patient experience, or it wasn't pleasant, but he fixed it. So that was my experience. Now, on this one, I went to sleep before the process and woke up afterwards, much more comfortable.
Are you sure that it was a colonoscopy and you were not abducted and just some aliens put probes on your rear and that's what really happened?
You wonder, don't you?
So let's go and see part of the anatomy. So you have an idea where we are. This is the cecum, which is the first part of the colon that connects with the small intestines. This is where the appendix should be. Do you still have appendix, or have you had that removed by surgery?
I still have my appendix.
You're very safe. I don't think you're going to have appendicitis anytime soon. Anyway, that usually happens on the youngest. Anyway, so this is the first part of the colon. This is as far as the probe will go. Clean, normal, no problem over here. Then you go to the ascending colon. This is actually the route that the stools follow before going out. The ascending part of your colon looks good as well. There's clean. Then we go to the transverse colon. That's the one that goes from side by side on the belly, then turns and goes down into the descending colon. And all of that, it's clean on your side. Those images is your probes, taking some pictures from the inside. Everything looks clean. But then we have a problem in your sigmoid. The sigmoid is this segment over here we discussed a little bit earlier, which it's like an S. That's why it's called sigmoid. And the problem with the sigmoid is that's where we store most of the stools before going to the bathroom. So as you build stool, it's gonna build up in there, and that's where you get most pressure from the stool. From the inside to the outside. And that's why in most problems will be found here on this segment of the colon. You were getting ready to say something.
No, I wasn't trying to say anything. I am going to say this. Others are seeing it, even if you're not. We're having just about every time you talk, there'll be just a couple of seconds sometime during your discussion when the connection goes bad. And it's kind of weird because here I am in the United States in a fairly upscale neighborhood. For the most part, I've got plain old cable internet. You've got, on the other hand, optical cable. And it's, what's the word?
Symmetrical.
Yeah, symmetrical. So you got uploads faster than my downloads. But something's going on with your connection today.
And I'm on Wi-Fi, so that might be something too. It might be something because of that. I'm not connected to the wall. Anyhow, so you have two things that are actually both associated with the pressure, the pressure inside the colon, but they are kind of opposite from each other. You have a diverticuli. Is that the plural or the singular?
Diverticulum is singular. Okay, this is an old Latin thing. And diverticuli is plural.
Thank you so much for the English classes. I really appreciate them. So then you have the polyp. So you have both things. Do you wanna elaborate on the one on the left is the diverticulum, and the one on the right are the polyps, and these polyps are getting popped out.
I don't want to.
That's the best image that I could get.
Yeah. I don't want to say anything more about it. I'm totally comfortable if you describe it. I'm just frustrated. And so was my my gastroenterologist this time. I had told him I was, you know, about the channel, and they got excited and they watched it. He came out. He was so frustrated. And we did an interview. And again, I'm sure you'll show it in some later, maybe long form content. But he said, I got a lot of procedures today, and I'm an hour behind now because I saw your polyp. I kept trying to get it. It was hooked right around, and I kept thinking I got it, and I didn't. So,
just the second time that has happened to you, right? That polyp has been a problem.
Yeah. So that's why I don't want to talk about it. I'm frustrated, but you can talk about it.
Well, just to let you know, both things are a problem. So on the one hand, you have a diverticulum that's like when you had your old bikes and one of the bikes get a damage on the inside of the tire, and it gets this bump from the outside. Mm-hmm. It's a part of the layer of the muscle that gets weakened and starts to pop up. And the problem is you can store some stool in there. It can get even more inflamed. They can even bleed. You can get more and more. And that's a big issue. That can, when you have a lot of them or they bleed too much, you can end up in the hospital. The polyp, on the other hand, is kind of a similar thing, but this ball is not going outwards. It's going inwards. It's going to the inside. It can also bleed. It can also develop. The polyp can get very inflamed and then start building up and develop as a cancer as well. A lot of cancers start as polyps. So those are the two major components. Both things are a problem. Want to tell the audience what was the advice from the gastroenterologist on the report? What did he tell you to eat?
Do you remember? I'm going to let you do that in a minute, but I am going to add a little bit more to the tick, the diverticulum. As you see in that image, it looks like a little berry hanging off the outside. And it's very similar in concept to brain aneurysms. They're often called mm-hmm. berry aneurysm, and they can result in a bleed too. The other thing that a diverticulus in the colon not only can cause very significant and maybe catastrophic bleeding, especially in older people, it can also cause what we call diverticulitis. The assumption is that feces gets maybe impacted in there or something, but you get an infection mm-hmm. and that can become devastating as well. So I'm just not happy about any of that.
Yep.
So
you asked me a question. You were going to tell us something about, what were you going to talk about?
No, what the doctor recommended, and he told
me. Oh, yeah, what did he recommend?
Eat a lot of fiber.
Yeah.
I know, and we say this every time we discuss fiber. We know there's a lot of people who like to be on a carnivore diet, and they have heard the body doesn't need fiber. We don't necessarily agree. We think that fiber can act like a prebiotic or even a postbiotic, where you are feeding your gut biome. So it has multiple benefits beyond just this tool, how this tool is. But we agree that if somebody is doing plain carnivore, they might feel okay without fiber. That's true as well. A lot of people will say, I cannot tolerate fiber because I will get a lot of diarrhea, I will get a lot of bloating, I'm going to start right off that. And what we have seen in most cases is if you gradually go with low doses of fiber and then start increasing, gradually those symptoms are going to go away because it's you're changing your gut biome. It's a similar thing that with what we see with metformin. It feeds and changes your gut biome into a healthy gut biome. I saw papers recently, and both people with meat-based diet and people with plant-based diet, they both had some good bacteria and some not so good bacteria. So both carnivore and plant-based and fiber will change the gut biome for the good, and some of that stuff is not that good. I think the only difference probably is that carnivore diet has not been as studied as fiber has been. But this is just to, at least I think in my train of thought is that if you're able to fix the consistency of your stools and you have polyps, you have diverticulum or diverticuli, whatever you have, that's going to reduce the possibilities of those getting worse. Those are my two cents on that. Want to add something to it or just go ahead and read today's riddle?
Let's go with today's riddle.
Go ahead.
Oh, you want me to do it?
Yep. You are the official riddle reader.
Riddle reader. That's a hard thing to say. I'm silent, simple, paper thin. I find the trouble deep within. I don't reveal what's plain to see. What's the old test that works quietly?
Interesting, right? So if you are a member and you live on the US, we are going to have to give you this for free. We're going to ship it. And if you haven't won one before, you're going to ship it. If you have won that before, we're not going to be able to do that. It's just like, let's have more people get a chance to get it. And I think we have...
Before you do, let me just make a couple of comments about the test. We've gotten several hundred people going with this test, and we're getting a lot of folks just coming in and saying, you know what, I think I'm going to bypass the test and go into what's called the 90-day metabolic reset. For a lot of people, I think that works better. And we've got a lot of people who've said, you know what, I've had this nagging concern that I need to get clinically evaluated. And a lot of folks are just bypassing both and going straight into the clinical thing. Now, let me just make a comment. The whole idea behind that metabolic risk assessment box is to help you get access to some really good state-of-the-art kind of testing for metabolic disease in your own home, not having to try to convince a doctor to do it. Things like the oral glucose tolerance tests are in it. Because the oral glucose tolerance test is in it, there's sugar in it, and therefore we cannot ship it outside of the U.S. We're looking at options that would not include food. And that's, believe it or not, going to take longer than I think many of us would like. Another thing to think about in terms of this box is this. This is not a simple, easy test where I pee in a cup, takes me 5 minutes, I send it out, or I pee in a cup, I see a color, and I know what's going on. That's not this kind of test. And if you're thinking that it is that easy, this is not the test for you. This is a real test for metabolic disease. And it takes a couple of hours outside of the OGDT. The oral glucose tolerance test takes a couple of hours itself. So if you get it, plan on actually doing the work. We look at heart rate responsiveness to workouts. We look at strength testing. Right now, we're including body calipers to look at some actual body fat percentages. And none of that's talking about the personal and family history components that are involved. This is a real evaluation. If you're not up for that, it's probably not the box for you. If you want to think about maybe something even lighter, consider some supplements or something like that. But be ready, be prepared before you get the box.
Yeah, you kind of skipped to what's in the box, and I want to share that. But first, the winner for today, it's Emmy Anderson. So if you're in the U.S., please call 859-721-1414. Gilbert can put the number over here. And we'll be happy to ship one of the boxes. And as Dr. Brewer said, the major component of the box is the oral glucose tolerance test. So it has some sugar on it for you to be able to measure your blood sugar before, 30 minutes after drinking that, 1 hour, 2 hours, and even 3 hours. So that way you can have the picture of how your body metabolizes sugar and a bunch of other measurements. And also it includes a 1 hour session with one of our coaches to go through the results. And as Dr. Brewer said, for a lot of people, this is the first time they will able to see, hey, I have a metabolic issue. I want to know how to fix it. And that's where the 90-day metabolic health metabolic reset program comes in. We have additional boxes at a lower price. So we will be discussing about if that price is going to change maybe in the near future, but for now, it stays the same. So Amy Anderson, congratulations. Thank you so much for participating. Today, we didn't have a lot of people trying, which was odd. If you are not a member, that's fine. Go ahead and try, because sometimes one of our members will give the answer, but if they already won, you can still win even if you're not a member. I'm just prioritizing members as I do.
I can tell you this. Today's was harder.
Well, that's for sure.
The rhymes you do, or the puzzles you do, and I should have known, but I didn't know what it was.
Well, I didn't want to just give it away like, oh, colon cancer. I mean, that's too simple, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, and it's a $170 box. Well, it's good. Oh, Amy says, I worked on a lab, so what's easy for me? So this drill was just made for her.
You had a ringer in the body.
That's almost cheating, but that's fine.
It is.
All right. So I want to give a shout out to Brent Henderson, Kelly Shouty, Jim Jernigan, and Lemon Lark. So if you want to get your name mispronounced by me, click on the join button right there next to the subscribe button, become a member. As you saw, by being a member, you get access to the chance of getting the metabolic risk assessment kit every week. We do the riddle, and if you're a member, you're going to be first in line to be able to win it. We answer members' questions first on the Q&A after the show, and we have a weekly video every Wednesday exclusive for you guys. And for those who say, you're just money grabbing with those exclusive videos, you don't notice. We have had members for a lot of time, and we were not being giving away something additional for them. And that's our way to say thank you.
Well, so, I got a comment about that.
Oh God. Okay, go ahead.
So Cindy loves to watch Stephen Bartlett, Diary of a CEO, DOAC. And you know, before every one of his shows, he begs for subscribers. And I actually did that once. It wasn't so much a beg. It was, we had that little section, you know, in the beginning, and Nathan had us, we took it off. It was not well orchestrated, but
I saw it. You were begging.
It was, oh, well, okay. I was begging and it was bad. But here's the bottom line. This is not, as you know, this is not a money play. This is saving lives, and we invest in the channel. Unlike Stephen Bartlett or the vast majority of channels out there, you're actually helping save lives. So you help it when you support the channel through becoming a member, like Jesus is talking about, but even just subscribing. So Jesus has been getting some consulting and coaching on how to improve the channel, and Daryl would say, oh, never ask for subscriptions. I'm not so sure that's entirely right, because again, unlike most channels, you've got the opportunity to help save lives by supporting this one.
Yep. If we were getting a lot of money, if Dr. Brewer was getting paid off by Big Pharma, we will probably not have the YouTube member sections, and you will probably not be seeing patients or developing the programs you're developing for that regard. So that's just how it is. Anyhow, Keith Lawson, greetings from Arizona. Great to see you here, Keith. Daniel P., would colon cancer be indicated by a blood test inflammatory markers like hsCRP?
I'll say this. I mean, when we see a positive C-reactive protein, we don't think colon cancer. I'm not going to say that could not be a case, because it's a very, very nonspecific indicator of inflammation. So I see Jesus looking around. I think he's over there looking it up on ChatGPT.
I wanted to see if I can get a number, but beyond the number, I think the one thing I will say on this regard is, if you're getting a high CRP because of colon cancer, it's maybe too late. There are other biomarkers, and the local ones that you get with the FIT test or the Cologuard. There's a blood biomarker.
RCNO,
antigen. So if you get that also can be something that's going to help way before the EHA CRP.
But I'll tell you from just experience, the most common thing when you see a CRP that's not associated with the arthritides like rheumatic arthritis or psoriatic arthritis or another inflammatory disease, it's usually just somebody had a sore throat. I had one of those. I've always had a CRP less than one, except one time I had, it was over 10 and I'd had a 3-week painful sore throat that ended about a week before I got the test. Mm-hmm. And that's very common.
Yep. What gets Qureshi? Does fasting and low carb diet reduce the risk of getting colon cancer? Does metabolic disease is a risk factor? We mentioned to us, it's probably the most important risk factor. Although on the evidence, you will see conflicting results. Some people that have done studies on what they call low carb diet, which sometimes is not even low carb diet. It's just high processed meat diet or whatever they call keto. You will sometimes see a rather significant increase of risk, quote unquote. But it's also this idea, as we mentioned, when you quit sugar and stop with the processed sugars, you can also see reducing symptoms and improvements on the prognosis of colon cancer. The problem is a lot of the evidence is still conflicting. We can probably in a near future deep dive into a specific study or a set of studies about low carb diet and colon cancer and discuss that.
So Jesus and others are, and I am working specifically on me getting more succinct. So here's the succinct reply, Waukesh.
Yes. Translate, please.
Succinct, short and sweet. Yes, yes, and yes.
Fantastic. Joe SXM, late for appointment fee. he has been late lately. So you own us like $50 already. No, you're good. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that donation. That goes a long way.
Thank you.
Eduardo Peña, question out of topic. I have the disc with images of my CT angiogram. Imaging was done by RadNet. I said it with a D, not a T. They do AI interpretation for breast, lung, brain, and prostate, but not for heart. So what can you do? Yeah, that's weird. So what you can do, like, do you know where to go for AI interpretation? Try to contact Clearly. They wouldn't reply. Yeah, sometimes the customer service at Clearly is not the best. I will try to find a phone number somewhere just to contact them, because they, even on the website, I think they have a form that you can just fill out the form and send it. You might need the help from a doctor to do that. But you can just send the disc. They will do the interpretation for about, I think it's $1,000 up to $1,500, depending on the state.
I've got a story about my own Clearly.
Go ahead.
Jesus, you were involved. In fact, you were part of the problem.
Why did I do wrong this time?
So you and Tracy were going to set up my CT angiogram. We got it set up. I traveled all the way down to Atlanta. Once I got in the room, it was only 15 minutes. I didn't feel any, you know, you're supposed to feel a little bit of a warmth when they inject the dye. I didn't feel any of that. It was done quick. The CTA tech and I had a good time. I recorded some video on that, which you wasted and didn't include in the.
You did not record any video. You sent me a picture of you on the table. And
no,
some of that on the road.
No, I even included video of us traveling down to Atlanta to get that done.
Yeah.
But as usual,
the format of the video didn't allow it. I'm sorry.
You ignored all of that work I did. And so then we started saying, okay, we waited a couple of weeks, then a couple of weeks more, then a couple of weeks more. And what was it? So it was, was it early December when I got it? And when they finally found it, they said, hey, wait a minute. Did you know there's another Dr. Thomas Brewer in California?
Did you send it there?
We think they sent it there, but we can't confirm that either. It's gone. And oh my gosh, you might actually have to redo it. And I'm going, oh, this is so typical of standard medicine. What a disaster.
Yeah. The clinic where you did it, I think they even changed their software after you got the test done.
They changed the software and they can't go back and rebuild it. And But then the clearly guys came and said, hey, you know what? We helped mess this up too, but give us the data, give us the discs, and let's see if we can recreate it. And that's exactly what they did.
Yep.
So despite your errors, they got it fixed.
I heard the full story and I don't know what my error was.
Well, that's which means you'll repeat it the next time it happens.
Vince Smith, I had a coworker who was fatigued and anemic, finally diagnosed him with a stage 3 cancer. I'm sensing that maybe Vince is a doctor, but that's what usually happens. Like anemia can be a reflection of something deeper. I want to make sure you take a look at that. Tree Lady, hi again. Sigmoidoscopy 20 years ago, worst thing ever. Did you want to share a little bit more about experience? We said it. It's not a fun test.
It is not fun.
Yeah. Daniel P. about the CRP levels. Oh, let me ask you this. Do you remember how often you should get the colonoscopy if the results are okay?
Well, they say it like every 5 years. Mm-hmm. The recommendation used to be starting at age 60 every 5 years until maybe 75 or 80. You know, the risk of perforation increases as your connective tissue decreases in strength and rigidity into your late 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Actually, the guys looking at mine have said, no, you don't need to come back 1 year from now or two or three. You need to come back 5 years from now. So I will be 73 at that point. I might go back a little bit earlier and see if somebody, see if he can take another shot at that thing, see if he can get rid of it.
Yeah. I personally probably will have it done maybe somewhere closer to my 40s. I will probably go there and have at least one. Just to make sure everything is okay, despite my young age, as we discussed, because I didn't really change my diet up until maybe 1 or 2 years ago. It's probably 2 years ago when I got a little bit more serious about it. So damage can be there. We don't know. And we don't have the Cologuard, FIT, or stuff like that. We have some hidden blood stool samples that you can do, but it's not the same. So and you have family history of colon cancer. That's something that puts you on a greater risk, high risk. Daniel P, your biome, gut biome changes when you are on carnivore. Yes. Like we said, if you do plant-based, if you do carnivore, if you eat fiber, if you don't eat fiber, if you do mostly meat, you can find studies about gut biome and different bacteria in there changing according to the diet you follow. We think compared to other people, and again, we know we have a lot of carnivores on the channel and we love you guys. And if carnivore is working for you, keep at it. I think it's a good, healthy option as well. But I hesitate to say that carnivore is for everyone. Somebody who will say, humans should be carnivore, all humans should be carnivore, I don't really think on absolutes. I'm not sure that's the case. What do you think, Dr. Brewer?
Yeah, you're saying biologically, and I don't know. I don't know. There's so much genetic diversity in the human population. I doubt it, too. To me, it's not a practical consideration because most of the people that I know that are vegans, and I have some family members and some other folks that are close to me that are vegan and are vegetarian, and the ones that I know are ethical vegans. They, you know, they're concerned about the treatment of animals. So I don't know that it's a it's a question that's. I understand the reason for the question, the theoretical reason for it. Wouldn't everybody just biologically be better off? You can make a case for that. I just don't know if you'd be right.
Yeah. Going doubling down, if good biome bacteria needs carb for feed on, why then carbohydrates are not essential nutrients? This is where people get confused about this. Our metabolism is not the same as the bacteria's metabolism.
Yeah.
So if you leave off carbs, your liver still has a way to produce glucose because we like it or not, we do need glucose. That's why you don't leave off with a glucose level on your blood of 0. You always have glucose. Difference is you don't have to eat carbohydrates to get that glucose. You can build that glucose from fat, proteins, and other nutrients. Bacteria can't produce their own glucose. bacteria ferment and create other nutrients based on the carbohydrates they get, like from fiber. But some bacteria can metabolize other nutrients as well. So it depends on the type of bacteria we're discussing. And we know now evidence has shown that bacteria in the gut biome can be a major difference between your cardiovascular health and brain health as well. So again, we're saying there's evidence for good bacteria with carnivore, but we'll be just blinding ourselves if we don't acknowledge that there is also evidence that supports fiber and gut biome, because there is. Amy Anderson just acknowledging for cheating. Yo, SXM, late again, but here. Thank you so much. You're gonna like this one. Rick Folia, aspirin is recommended for secondary prevention. That is when you have cardiovascular disease, even if you don't have a heart attack or stroke. But what about a high calcium score, 700? Is aspirin still recommended?
So, Rick, I'm going to give you Jesus, what used to be my favorite response, and Jesus hated it. Now, every other question I hear him answer, he's using that response. It depends.
I feel so betrayed by myself.
It depends on how you define secondary disease. All of us define secondary diseases. Or secondary prevention. You've already got the disease. You're just trying to slow down any further any further progression. The bigger it depends, though, is this. If you have a positive calcium score, are you already a cardiovascular patient? I would say yes. And in fact, most people would. One of the reasons that aspirin video that we did was so popular, it was because YouTube content creators, the New York Times, everybody else was saying they saw those recommendations. They said, nope, you don't need to take baby aspirin anymore. But people are still taking baby aspirin. And it's because they're right. Their doctors do understand this. They understand that if you have plaque, you're now a cardiovascular disease patient. This is now secondary. You don't have to have had a heart attack. You do not have to have had a stroke, just plaque. And so a calcium score of 700, you're clearly a patient now. I would take aspirin unless you have reasons to rule it out.
Definitely. And I think it applies the same concept for Rick Folia's next question, which is calcium score, but CT angiogram with no soft plaque. What happens here, and this is something we have mentioned a couple of times only, when you think about plaque formation, it's not just inflammation. There's a phenomenon which I like to call microclotting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on the evidence where the damage on the inner layer also creates a response for platelets, even if it's not a big clot. And that can create even more inflammation and bigger clots and bigger damage. Even though it's like sounds counterintuitive, where it's supposed to be healing, but that's what aspirin does, helps reduce that inflammation and reduce especially that amount of unwanted platelets where they should not be. Bart Robinson, Bart K wouldn't agree, but he's a little too overboard for me. I agree with both assessments. We don't agree with everybody, and not everybody. I don't even agree with Dr. Brewer. He doesn't agree with me on everything. But we are a little bit moderate, where we say, I think there's truth in a lot of sides of the discussion. The only thing that we don't recommend is the standard American diet.
Well, I think there's a lot of us that agree with that.
Yeah, I think we all should. I mean, if somebody is defending the standard American diet, I saw a video from, I haven't watched it all. I need to watch it before I criticize it. But Simon Hill just put out a video about refined carbohydrates. I haven't seen it. I need to see it. But he was posting the question, are those really harmful? That would be an interesting perspective to hear what they have to say.
While I'm thinking about it, Jesus, I know you're doing a video on it. You wrote a great script. We're working on it right now. Any comments about the big hubbub about lean mass hyperresponders and the plaque begets plaque article?
So let me tell you how this conversation started and why Dr. Brewer is asking that question. I saw a video, I don't remember, it was Monday or somewhere this week or last week. Gil Carballo, who's a friend of ours, like we are friends with low carbers, we're friends with some other people who are more like the mainstream, and Gil Carballo does great analysis on his articles as well, even if we don't agree on everything. That's an example. But he did a video where he started pointing out a lot of flaws on the lean mass hyperresponder study, which a lot of you probably are familiar with. Nick Norwitz, Adrian Soto, Dave. We had Dave discussing the article
a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And you butchered the intro. That was the one that you really messed up.
I butchered the whole show. Anyhow.
You messed up.
Yeah, I botched it.
Totally geek speak.
Well, we have some geeks in the audience. I tried my best, but you kept pushing me into geek land. But they discussed a lot of flaws on the study. They had Gil Carballo had Matthew Butoff on the show. He interviewed him. And I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. To me, it looked like Matthew Butoff was throwing Adrian, Nick, and Dave a little bit under the bus. That's my personal perspective.
Matthew Butoff. He's the
Dr. Matthew, the cardiologist.
He's a known investigator in cardiovascular disease. He did a lot of great work getting the calcium score started. He's looked at other stuff. He's been even though he's got great academic chops, he's been willing to look at things like garlic, which other academicians have not looked at. He's done some fantastic work. I've just never seen him that active in social media.
Yeah. And
my read was a little bit more that Gil surprised him. I won't say shanghaied, but maybe that's a better word. Surprised Butoff. And I think Butoff let some of that, you know, I think Butoff began to feel like he was surrounded with facts that he didn't quite understand yet in terms of what was going on with the information. That's my read overall. There's a lot to the actual criticisms, though. You know, one thing I'll say about the criticisms, there is some significant accuracy, and we'll cover that. But another thing to think of is this. This research, the lean mass hyper-responder research, is really starting to make people question, have internists been an entire specialty? Internists, have they been completely wrong in terms of their priorities for an indefinite time period? Family practitioners and the subspecialists, cardiologists, lipidologists, have they all been wrong in terms of saying it's LDL, it's LDL, it's LDL, knowing that metabolic disease was a big thing, not really knowing so much how many times they were skipping right over a diagnosis of metabolic disease. So it's sort of like the emperor has no clothes. They got mad. There's going to be a lot of continued pushback on this issue. And to your point in the video, we need, you know, guys like me, I'm 67 years old. We don't really have time to watch and wait for all of the debate to finish in the medical scientific community.
Mm-hmm. Takes decades.
We've got to make some choices right now about what to do.
Mm-hmm. So. Yep. And even if the weaknesses of the study, the evidence, I think it's good enough because it's a population that hasn't been studied. And I still believe that there's more people with the lean mass hyperresponder status that we know of. And we would still tackle down metabolic disease and inflammation as major risk factors. We have never said that LDL doesn't matter. That's another thing we have different from other people on YouTube, where some people on YouTube will say, you're fine if your cholesterol is over 400, 500. Not even Dave Feldman says that. Dave was very clear. He said, I'm not saying 400 cholesterol is healthy. He said it.
That's what's so interesting about this. Dave, Nick, and Adrian are getting hammered on this issue, and they are called statin denier or cholesterol deniers, and they never did that.
No.
What's happening is the low-carb community has been doing that forever, and they're latching on to this research and saying, aha, We told you so. And it's a little bit more subtle than that. It really is.
Yeah. We still see LDL as a biomarker. But we have said it multiple times. We will be neglecting enough to say LDL can be pretty much associated with inflammation. You believe it's more like a firefighter just because of metabolic disease? I do think that it has some role on perpetuating inflammation, but we both agree that the main problem is doctors neglecting metabolic disease just to lower down LDL. That's the biggest problem with this approach.
No question. A couple of other points about the whole science here. Number one, you cannot have seen what goes on with homozygous familial hypercholesterolemia patients. We're talking about teenagers having heart attacks because they got FH from their mom, FH from their dad. Really, metabolically, they're healthy, but you know they get these 500, 600, 700 LDL components. These, again, teenagers having heart attacks. There's something going on with LDL there. Now, we see these lean mass hyperresponders with those kind of numbers, and, you know, they don't seem to be growing plaque. Then you can argue, well, Gil Carvalho and the lipidologists are saying, oh, yeah, they're growing plaque, and, yeah, it's growing real fast. I think there's a lot that needs to be sorted out there. But again, we're starting to have tomorrow's video today. I just thought it'd be helpful to get some of that conversation out there.
Definitely. So this has to do with it. Daniel P, is keto carnivore still healthy for someone with a positive calcium score? Yes. Just remember, we have said this multiple times and we need to double down sometimes because, you know, if you're new to the channel, we really appreciate it. And we have like 2000 videos and all of them are boring. So we're trying to make this more entertaining. calcium score is the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, but we're boring guys.
Well, yeah, I believe me, I've tried, but I'm just, I'm giving up on that fight. Dr. Brewer is an amazing doctor, but I'm more of a clown.
I'm sorry.
I'm more of a clown, and I have tried. Believe me, I'm killing my credibility for you guys, but it's not working. Anyhow. calcium score is more like a reflection of how much calcified plaque, but it doesn't show soft plaque. That's why a CT angiogram or a CIMT are better options. Regardless, it's not saying that calcium score is worthless. That for a lot of people, that's the first step to know that you have plaque and you have to reduce inflammation. And keto carnivore diet are great ways to manage inflammation in our perspective, especially if you're dealing with metabolic disease. So, yeah, we're very open to understand that people have different metabolisms, and sometimes you need to try what works better for you.
Calcium score does not show soft plaque. CIMT and CT angiogram do. So the latter two, the CIMT and the CT angiogram, have major advantages. But each one of them has its problems. And one of the problems, you know, we've used calcium score quite a bit. And one of the more common reasons, maybe top three reasons for coming to see us is, hey, I got a calcium score of like 1200. I'm dead man walking. What do I do? And then, you know, after a couple of visits, they're much more comfortable with where they are.
Yep. Last comment, Brad, outstanding response, doc. The enemy of the good is often the pursuit of perfect. We all live in real time and real world, can't wait on the slow academics lab guys to make up their minds. Yeah, for sure. That's what you need to test. Don't guess and do your own work and experiment on yourself and see what works for you, because what works for you probably is not the same that works for the next person. That's all we say. Anyhow, that was a good show today. I failed miserably to keep it under an hour, but I'm cool with it.
As you often do.
As I'm getting more used to failure right now. I don't like it. But Saturday, we're going to be posting a video about at-home remedies to lower blood pressure. So don't miss out, because you don't watch it, I'm getting fired. So I don't want to get fired. Any closing remarks, Dr. Brewer?
Yeah, there was a good question from JMK. He's one of your favorites. I think it was JMK. He was asking about sensitivity and specificity.
Oh, okay, let me see if I can find it.
For fecal occult blood versus Cologuard. Again, you're looking at two different things. Fecal occult blood is just looking for blood. Cologuard, on the other hand, is looking for different components of DNA. So you might think that, well, and here you got to understand sensitivity and specificity.
I was about to tell you that. Yeah, can you explain? can you dumb down what it's sensitivity, what's specificity?
I don't know that I'm smart enough to do that. You know, we had a whole bunch of that back in school, and you can understand it, but it's hard to sometimes hard to actually describe it correctly. Sensitivity is how quickly you can pick something up, how sensitive the test is. But specificity is different. Once it picks something up, how likely is it to be right? Now, you heard me describe it. What's a better way to define that?
I don't know if I have a better way to define it. Let me give it a shot. And if you're an academic watching the show, correct us if we're wrong, because this is something that you get taught on the very first year of statistics and epidemiology. So I think you're right, Dr. Brewer. So sensitivity is if you have 100 people, and out of the from those 100, 80 have a disease, is this test going to be able to catch all 80? If it's able to catch all 80, it's a very sensitive test. That's sensitivity. It can catch the positive cases.
But that same test might pick up 96, 16 of which are wrong.
Exactly. And that's specificity.
Highly sensitive, not very specific.
Exactly. That's a specificity. Yeah. So you might have some false positives if it's not as specific enough.
So walk through the logic on this. Remember, Cologuard's looking at pieces of DNA that might come from a tumor. Fecal occult blood is just looking for blood. Which do you think would be more sensitive?
I'll say it's the antigens, Cologuard, not just blood.
Really? I would have said the other way around, because I would have said, you know, there's so many causes of blood, so you're going to pick up a lot of different reasons for blood.
Oh, you said it's sensitive or specific?
Sensitive.
Oh, yeah. Then, yes, the blood. Yeah. And the Cologuard is more specific.
That's what I would have thought. The reality is the evidence would indicate just the opposite. Why that's the case, it's a good question.
Yeah.
It's too deep for you and me right now.
No, and at the end, that's why there are multiple tests and why I also think that I know the colonoscopy is not the best. Sigmoidoscopy are not the best, even though they're probably, they're the best compared to the rest, right? So yeah. they still have flaws and there's a big problem, but that's the better chance you have. That and changing your lifestyle. But you can change your lifestyle and leave blindfolded and thinking you're fine. That's okay. That's kind of a gamble. I'll probably just test and continue my lifestyle just to make sure. But
I'm absolutely sure that I didn't have any problems. I didn't have any diverticuli or any polyps.
Yeah. And it's good for you to know, because that makes you think, okay, I might need to adjust something, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right.
Okay. I don't have anything else.
No. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you for watching.
Again, to keep it less than an hour.
Well, we'll try again next year, probably. I think this year is going to be long shows.
We hope you found today's episode informative and useful. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on all our latest episodes. For more information about becoming a patient or participating in our exclusive events, visit PrevMedHealth.com or call 859-721-1414.